The Five Star Zone with Rico Beard.
Welcome to another edition of The Five Star Zone. I'm Rico Beard, your host. Along with me from the BTN, Harold Shelton, kind enough to join us for another season of Big Ten football. Harold, we just, really a couple days away. I think it's a couple games on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I mean, leading on Saturday is the big game, 1-2, Ohio State versus Texas. I think that's the one that everybody's looking forward to. Where you want to start with this? Which games you want to start to break down first?
I mean, that's the biggest game, right? We might as well talk a little Ohio State, Texas. The fact that you even get this kind of game in week one is very rare. So I'm glad that we got something like that to kick the season off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess back in the day, it would really mean something. It would be playoff ramifications. Both teams are probably going to make the playoffs. So it's something. It's tantalizing for the fans. And here's the thing, and we're going to get to breaking down the games, but I know a lot of people are just kind of disenfranchised with the sport right now because they're like, well, games don't mean anything. I'm the opposite. This is the kind of thing that I actually look forward to, when teams could play each other and not fear losing. You still see teams right now buying out. I think Alabama and I think Virginia Tech just bought each other out, because they don't want to play. They don't want that blemish. And I think that until college coaches and ADs and fans realize you don't have to be perfect anymore to win a national title, and it's not tainted, there's no asterisk next to it, it's just the best team. And for some reason, it's the only sport where perfection is in NCAA basketball, people celebrate the Cinderella. In college football, oh, well, you lost the game, so you're out. Well, now you don't have to be, so now you should be able to challenge yourself. I like the fact that Ohio State and Texas are challenging themselves. I like the fact that they're actually going out there and going to play this game. In week one, you're going to learn about each other. Two quarterbacks who really we don't know anything about. I mean, we've heard about Arch Manning, but we really don't know. I mean, coming in and mop up duty. I mean, heck, Aiden Childs did that at Oregon State. And then we found out he was the main guy. It wasn't quite as easy as being a substitute teacher. And with Ohio State, was this, Sands is the guy. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he could do either. So it's going to be different this year, because I think a lot of college football is going to be based off of quarterbacks, where you just are going to be looking at the logo and looking at the logo on the helmet saying, well, because this team is good, that means the quarterback has to be good. And Harold, I think a lot of fan bases are going to be thoroughly disappointed when they actually see the rubber hit the road and see that the people who they thought were going to be all that five-star kid, that highly touted transfer who makes all that NIL money, well, he kind of sucks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of to your point, Oregon's going to be similar, where I think Ohio State and Oregon – on paper, probably had the two most talented rosters in the Big Ten, but Penn State's the favorite because we know what they are. Like, we know what Drew Aller is. We know what Singleton and Allen are. Like, we've seen them play multiple years, big games, all that kind of stuff. We know what they are. And so I think that's why they were picked to win the Big Ten in the media poll that came out in July. And Ohio State, we don't know what Julian Sain's going to be. We don't know what Dante Moore is going to be. We saw Dante Moore struggle at UCLA as a freshman, and he barely played last year behind Dylan Gabriel. And so now you wonder, will that five-star talent come out that we saw, you know, in high school, or is he just going to be, you know, just a guy? Like, we don't know. And so I think the ceiling for both of those teams could be really good, but it's going to be very heavy quarterback dependent. And you know, for Ohio State, you kind of get the benefit of the doubt, because we've seen Ryan Day have so many good quarterbacks, right? We've seen Justin Fields. We've seen C.J. Stroud. I thought Kyle McCord kind of got a raw deal, just going, trying to follow those two guys was a hard act to follow. And then the way the Michigan game ended in 23, they were ready to run him out of town. But he still threw for a ton of yards at Syracuse the following year. And then Will Howard wins the national title. So I feel like Ryan Day gets the benefit of the doubt in terms of quarterback guru and, you know, getting guys ready to play. But to have that in week one against Texas, that's a tough ask.
I mean, it is. And look, I look at a lot of teams, and yeah, I'm going to, especially early in the year, Harold, I'm going to lean towards the teams with the experienced QB. And by experience, I mean the guy that was there last year. Because, you know, I think gone are going to be the days of the 3- and 4-year player as a quarterback. You know, the days of the Connor Cooks are gone. the you know, you're not going to get that anymore. The Chad Hennies, you know, for Michigan, who was a starter for 4 years, yeah, those are over. I look at this thing now, and yeah, I'm just like you. It's hard to kind of predict what team's going to do what in week one. Week one to me is just kind of, I got to wait to see, because I don't know. I've been told, and it has grown into a little NFL light. I've been told that these teams are good, but in week one, it's always going to be a team that's like, whoa, didn't see that coming. And it's going to be another team like, wow, what an utter disappointment. This is going to be a long year for them. Ohio State gets the challenge to go up against Texas. Because the game is at the Horseshoe, I'm going with Ohio State in this game, but I really don't know. I really don't know what's going on. It makes it so difficult, because that, I mean, the other games, I mean, I'm trying to think, is there any other close games? Because, you know, I know MSU has Western Michigan. They're favored by almost 3 touchdowns. Michigan's favored by damn near 5 touchdowns against New Mexico State. So even if the teams don't do as expected, they still should win the game. But it's hard for me to kind of come up with who I think is going to actually do well, and not just the Big Ten, but in like I said, on the national landscape. I mean, Penn State, I understand why everybody's saying that, because, you know, it's the devil that you know. It's all these guys, and I've seen what they can do. I've seen what happens. But, yeah, the other ones, that's going to be a toss-up. So let's go back to the Ohio State-Texas game. I guess what are some keys? What should we be looking out for?
Well, it's funny that these teams just played, you know, back in January in the Cotton Bowl. Obviously, the rosters look completely different. Ohio State had 14 guys drafted, so, you know, you're not going to see the same level of talent. And Texas had a ton of guys taken too. But I think stylistically, there's still things you could take away from it. And if you remember in that game, Jeremiah Smith was pretty much a non-factor. They played zone, you know, throughout the game. They were a zone-heavy team, and they pretty much just bracketed him, and you had very few one-on-one opportunities, which meant guys like Carnell Tate were able to have a really big game. And you saw Trevion Henderson, you know, take a screen pass to the house at the end of the first half. And so I wonder, will Ryan Day try to get some easy throws from Sand to Tate and to the new running backs like James Peoples or C.J. Donaldson, and try not to force it to Jeremiah Smith as much? I mean, granted, he's the best receiver in football. You could argue he's the best offensive player in football. So you definitely want to give him some opportunities. But I think there will be guys that are open in those zones, you know, like Tate. And, you know, they always have more guys, Brandon Ennis being another one. Ohio State's been loaded at receiver forever. I would be curious just to see what the target share looks like, because I think Texas is going to try really hard to take Smith away, just with the way that they play defense.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for him before. I mean, it didn't work for him, but, you know, basically, let's take Smith out. Let's make somebody else beat us, because, I mean, this, stop me when you heard this before. Man, Ohio State got another great wide receiver that's going to take over. And I'm sure NFL teams are already having a countdown clock. The last one was like Emeka Buka, Marvin Harrison Jr. So they're turning into wide receiver U. Them and LSU, I think, probably are the two programs who are cranking out the receivers left and right.
Yep. So, Gary Wilson, Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, you can go on and on and on. Like, they're breeding receivers down there.
No, you're right. And the latest one, and Terry McLaurin just got paid $100 million for 3 years. So, yeah. They're doing their thing. Like I said, the other games that are happening are, I guess, what are some of the keys to some of the other teams? Because the games aren't necessarily close. I don't think that many Big Ten teams should lose this weekend. I mean, if you told me that they ran the slate and everybody won, I wouldn't be shocked. Would you?
No, I wouldn't be shocked. I do think Utah-UCLA is interesting. Just, you know, old Pac-12 battle, you know, even though both are in different conferences now, you know, they've played quite a bit throughout the years. And, you know, Nico's gone out there from Tennessee to UCLA, so I kind of want to see him. It's more about just seeing some of the newer faces in these places, because to your point, you know, a lot of these spreads are really big, and so a lot of these teams should win comfortably. But you want to see some of these transfer quarterbacks. You want to see what Preston Stone looks like at Northwestern. They got a tough game at Tulane. You want to see know what Nico looks like at UCLA. You want to see what the Penn State receivers look like. Again, it's a team that they should have no issue with. But when you add three receivers in the portal who are all productive and receivers been a huge issue for you in the past, like that was your weakness. If you can make that a strength, then that makes you even more of a contender to win it all. So I think you're looking more at specific players in positions of need than necessarily like the matchup and, you know, who's going to win and by how much. You want to see what these new faces look like.
Yeah, like I said, that is the biggest thing for me, UCLA and Utah, because UCLA is a team, once again, there's a bunch of teams in the Big Ten that once you get past like the top three, I have no idea. Yeah. If the quarterback play takes off, UCLA could be a powerhouse. USC could be a powerhouse. Nebraska could be a powerhouse. Heck, you look at the two local schools in Michigan, Aiden Childs and Bryce Underwood. If either one of those turn out to be that guy, they could turn out to be surprise teams in the Big Ten. I really have no clue. So I don't think I'm really going to learn anything about a lot of – like I know for Michigan State, I think week two is going to be the week. And we'll get to that later on. But, you know, Michigan State hosts Boston College and Michigan goes on the road at Oklahoma. It's going to tell me a lot more about what I need to know about these teams, how good they're going to be. But since we're here, let's go to Michigan. What should we expect from Bryce Underwood in this game and perhaps for the season?
For this game, I want to say not much because I don't know how much you want to show Oklahoma in week two. It's a New Mexico team that you're a heavy favorite against. You know, I would assume, like most Big Ten versus non-power schools, you'll try to control the line of scrimmage, you know, run the ball, give Bryce some easy throws early. You know, wouldn't be shocked if it was a, you know, play action to the tight end or, you know, maybe play action to, you know, one of the receivers, you know, going downfield for 10, 15 yards. I don't think they try to do too much with him. Maybe his instinct takes over, and if the pocket breaks down, he tries to scramble and get something. But I assume they would try to limit as much as possible, just knowing that Oklahoma game is next. But you still want him to get real live reps because you don't want it to just be like a walkthrough and then you go to Norman and you feel like you're not prepared. So it'll be it's an interesting balance that Sherrone Moore has to have there, where you want to get Underwood, you know, enough reps where you feel like he's ready for week two, but you also don't want to show too much where Oklahoma knows what they can prepare for.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as Michigan goes, I look at Underwood, and I you're right. I wonder, do they just try to keep a very almost a Tecmo Bowl offense for this first game? We're only going to run about 6 to 10 plays, different variations of that, and then try to break you out against Oklahoma, because that's going to be, you know, a steeper learning curve when you go up against the Sooners in Norman. Like you said, a game that they should win. It's going to be on a Saturday night. I am wondering what happens the first time he hits adversity, like all the true freshmen. Like what I mean, because when you go back, I mean, they've only had four. I think I saw a stat. Michigan's only had four true freshman quarterbacks, and the last one was Tate Forcier. Not a ton of success. I guess Henny was maybe the only one that really had a great success with them. But most historically speaking, true freshmen just don't pan out. Now, my thing with this and what I've said to Michigan fans on my show, go build through the learning curve. Be with them. Don't turn on them. Don't eat your young. Don't flip the script the way a lot of fans did with Joe Milton and all the other guys who came in with a lot of hype. The Shane Morris's, oh, this guy's going to be the greatest thing. And when he wasn't, had a couple bad games, he was a bum. I think if you stick with him, I'm looking at next year for Michigan. You could be like Florida. You could be like South Carolina, where now all of a sudden you got some of the best QBs out there. Because as we've said, the key to winning college football, in my opinion, is having that second-year quarterback that's been in your system who knows what's going on. Because now you have an advantage over somebody like Bryce coming in there, you know, wide-eyed, and the game is just kind of going really, really fast. I mean, I think about Dylan Raiola came in as a top-rated quarterback. Dante Moore going to UCLA, top-rated quarterback, and they found out everybody in college was a captain of their high school team. Everybody in college is fast. Everybody in college can do a whole lot of stuff, and everybody in college is trying to go to the NFL just like you. They don't care how much hype you had at your little small podunk college, I mean, high school that you went to. Now it's a different stage. So when I look at the thing with Bryce, I wonder how much patience that Michigan will give him and how much will they allow him to be himself, or will they just try to play some ball control and just kind of go old school Michigan football and just not like last year where you just couldn't pass the ball. I mean, only the service academies had worse passing yards, but just kind of control the game, like you say, play action, tight end, screen plays, just kind of get your feet wet. Because I know, I mean, looking at the spring game, I wasn't overly impressed. He got half of his yards on the final play of the game off of kind of a trick play. But he looked like a true freshman to me. So I'll be anxious to see what happens with him. Up the road on Friday night, you know, Aiden Childs. Now, he is coming into year two of Jonathan Smith. What should we expect from Aiden Childs at Michigan State?
So I think that receiver room should be much, much better. I think last year a lot was put on Nick Marsh, and I don't think he was necessarily ready to handle it. And Childs, for sure, I think there was just way too much on his plate. The offensive line wasn't good enough in protection. It wasn't good enough to open up holes in the run game. And so it felt like for the longest time he tried to do everything. So you'd see the 40-yard throw downfield, you know, on a dime, immediately followed by a fumble in the end zone. And it was just too much of that with Childs. And I felt like he tried to put too much on himself, knowing he had to do everything, had to be Superman. He shouldn't have to be this year. You know, they hit the portal really hard, a receiver, you know, brought in multiple guys there that can help with Marsh. And so if you get an Amari Kelly or a McCray, guys who are successful, you know, at the non-power level, if they can, you know, open up some, you know, if they're route running, if they're explosive after the catch, stuff like that, then all that attention's not on Marsh. And Marsh could continue to just be a stud and be what we saw for most of last year. And in turn, with those receivers, maybe Jack Velling, you know, gets loose, because he was a really big disappointment considering what he did at Oregon State. And I think a lot of it was because there was so much attention in the run game and the receivers that he was able to get 8 touchdowns and he was open all the time. And last year, you know, that was not the case at all. You know, he was pretty much the second option. Teams knew that, so they tried to take him away. So if you get these receivers that can actually, you know, free up some more space for him underneath, like, he should be able to have a much better year this year.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, and I think for both local teams here, Michigan State, it's the offensive line. Michigan State's offensive line was garbage last year. I mean, let's just call it what it was. They had one Big Ten caliber offensive lineman. He ended up getting drafted. The other guys either injured or they, you know, they just weren't up to snuff. Case in point, Nate Carter makes the team for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
Nate Carter in preseason was like, where was this guy? And then I got to thinking, well, he's actually got people blocking for him. He's actually got people opening up holes. Like, he was explosive for the Falcons, that they were like, how'd this guy slip all the way down? Like, and they got him as an undrafted free agent, and he makes the team. And then I think, well, that's because State's line was god-awful. I mean, it sucked. So now, and because I was up there talking with Coach Smith, and I guess they have about 8-9 guys in the rotation. Now, I guess the key to that 9-guy rotation is how many of the 9 are actually Big Ten caliber offensive linemen? Because you can have 9 people, but if it's just 9 MAC-level players, you're not going to do well, because when MAC teams play Big Ten teams, they normally lose. So how many of those players, and of the 9, if you have at least 4 that could possibly go on to the next level, or 4 that could play Big Ten caliber, then yes, I think that you could protect Childs. You could open up the running game, because they're probably going to go with a 2-back system up there. And it should help them out. Like I said, the wide receiver room, that's, you know, Courtney Hawkins, the wide receiver coach, loved this room. I think right now it's probably his second best room, but I also think he's willing to say it could be his best room. Now, he didn't want to disrespect the room that he had when he had three NFL players in that room with Reed and Naylor and Keon. So those three guys went on, they're playing in the league, and they're all productive in the league. But I think he sees something with this class and in this room. You're right. If you can get Aiden Child some protection, he can cut down on the turnovers, and he doesn't have to play hero ball. He doesn't have to just look to number six and Nick Marsh and kind of spread the wealth that we could see the Bellings. We could see a lot of different things, and maybe they could surprise some people. Now, the funny thing about it is, this is a game where I probably would take a cue from Dan Campbell, coach of the Detroit Lions. I think they're down to their third string kicker. So I'm not kicking the ball. I'm not, unless it's an extra point or we get the ball on the 20-yard line and that's what, a 30, 35-yard kick. Other than that, I'm just going for it. I think that this is one game where you can kind of afford to do that, and it kind of sends a message to other folks that, you know what, maybe Michigan State's going to be that team that just always, you know, living on the edge. Kind of like when you watch the Lions play, you just assume they playing. They're going to play four downs. They're not going to just punt the ball because it's fourth and four. They may line up and go for it. I think you could use that as an advantage because, yeah, right now, according to him, one kicker's a game-time decision. I never heard a kicker a game-time decision. And, they're down to that third-string kicker. Who I don't think has ever kicked the ball before. Now, look, Jonathan Kim had never really kicked field goals either, and he turned out to be a stud for them last year. Heck, one of their best players, one of their most consistent players. We'll see. But when I look at that, I'm just like, I don't know. Am I overthinking things there? Or is just saying I would just go for it a ton in this game?
No, I don't think you're wrong on that. We've seen Smith kind of roll the dice where it's kind of like, well, you have a good kicker. And there have been times where it's like, well, maybe you should have kicked there and he decided not to. So I think he is inclined to go for it more often than not to begin with. And with this kicking situation and you're playing a MAC team and you're trying to send a message, if it's a fourth and one, fourth and two, like you might just want to line up and go for it. And it's like, if you can't get a yard against a MAC team, like, you know, that's a problem. And so I think he might try to send that message early. And, you know, I think we'll kind of know early on as we know, Jonathan Smith wants to run the ball. And last year was by far his worst rushing team that he's had between his Oregon State days and last year at Michigan State. It was by far his worst rushing team. And that included a team that was 2-10 at Oregon State. So it's got to get better. I think they did pick up some pieces there in the portal. They got a FCS All-American. They got a center from Wake Forest who started a ton of games. So you hope when you plug those two in, you hope Stanton takes another step over at left tackle. There should be pieces there where it could come together and become a solid unit. And if it does, then, you know, maybe they become a top half Big Ten team. Schedule-wise, you finally don't get Ohio State. You don't get Oregon. I mean, you get Penn State, obviously, you know, which would be tough. And, you know, the Michigan game would be tricky as always, but it's at home. And then if you can get off to a good start and show you can actually run the ball, maybe things starting to fall into place with the more experienced quarterback like we talked about. You know, that's always the key. And, you know, Childs is, I think, only one of six that returned last year that started double-digit games. So, you know, you actually – have an advantage there where other teams don't.
It's going to be interesting to see exactly who which quarterback rises up, because I think that there's a lot in there. One team I was going to say, who's your biggest surprise, but I've been riding what you told me in a previous podcast, was this Washington. Like I actually expect bigger things from Washington than Las Vegas and a lot of other people. I think, you know, because I saw the odds for Washington to make the playoffs is like plus 1,000. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you made a great case because they got the best quarterback, wide receiver, running back combo returning in the Big Ten. Jed Fish is a guy who just, it seems like he knows how to get the most out of his players. Could Washington be the biggest surprise team this year in the Big Ten?
It certainly could be. And to your point, we've seen Jed Fish take big leaps from year one to year two. And, you know, when he was at Arizona, you know, they were 1-11, and in year two they went 5-7. You know, last year they were 6-7, but again, DeMond Williams only started the final two games. And so now that he's got his feet wet, I think he's the top five quarterback in this league just on talent alone. And as we know, so much goes with the quarterback. Stuff breaks down. He's able to make plays on his own. He can ad lib and keep things alive, which a lot of players can't in this league. And so just to have that, and you got a bruiser in Jonah Coleman, you got a really good receiver in Denzel Boston, but they're kind of similar to Michigan State in that, can they block? Can they open up holes? Can they protect? Because we saw Williams get sacked a ton. I think he got sacked 10 times against Oregon. That's clearly not going to be able to work moving forward. And some of that could have been his inexperience. You know, am I holding on to the ball too long? Should I have gotten rid of it earlier? But some of it, too, is you just didn't have the dudes. And so if they don't have the dudes again, that could kind of torpedo the whole season. But if it's passable, offensively, they should put up a ton of points this year.
So, yeah. So, I'm like I said, there's a lot of teams. I mean, the USC, Lincoln Riley, I think there's a ton of pressure on him. Dante Moore at Oregon. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. And we'll have a better, I guess, I don't want to speak for you, but I think we'll have a better grasp of what this league is next week when we do the pregame, the week two preview. Because I don't know. I'd be lying right to the listeners to say, oh, there you go, this, watch out for this. And I have no idea, and neither do you.
Exactly. Like, I could do all of the prep and the research and all that stuff from last year, but I don't know necessarily how it's going to translate. I can tell you some trends that I've seen here and there and why this team might be good, but we don't know. And I feel like even after week one, you know, there's so many Big Ten versus MAC, or, you know, we got FCS schools, and so it's going to be hard to even, you know,
Here's the thing: if a new quarterback or a team goes out there and struggles against a bad, quote unquote, bad opponent, all right, we may see some problems here. They go out there and do what they're supposed to do. Okay, let's wait to see when you get your first real test. But yeah, you come out there. I think we kind of knew last year was a microcosm of the year. Aiden Childs' first pass with an interception.
Yep, and they needed a defensive stop, a couple of them late to beat FAU 16-10, and it's like, and you couldn't control the line of scrimmage against
FAU down, I believe. Yeah.
So, like, to your point, if it's a team you're supposed to beat handily and you don't, then that could tell you a lot. But if it's a team you're supposed to beat handily and you do, it's kind of like, okay, good for you. What's next?
So, all right, real quick, because the news just kind of broke. Brett McMurray, and said that Maryland athletic director is saying that by 2030, the Big Ten will add two more teams, taking it to 20. I mean, this is the biggest no bleep moment. You were never going to stop at 18. You were never. You're going to go to a round number of 20. I think this could be beneficial if they play this right for those traditionalists out there. Because you could easily just break it up into, okay, well, almost like the old school American League, National League, old Big Ten versus the new Big Ten. Old Big Ten is a division. You're going to play all nine teams in that division. And the new Big Ten, well, you're going to play all nine teams in your division. And then the Big Ten championship game will be, I guess, that crossover game, the best of the best. And at first I'm thinking, well, that's not really fair, but I forgot. The new Big Ten may actually be a tougher division because Penn State was team 11.
Yep.
Penn State would be over there with USC would be over there. Nebraska. With Nebraska.
Yep. Nebraska, Oregon, Washington.
Whereas this one would just have Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Michigan State.
Iowa.
Iowa. So yeah, it's like if you could
be pretty balanced.
You could go. It would be the most balanced it was since Leaders and Legends, but everybody hated the name, so they scrapped it. And I don't know why. The dumbest decision ever by the Big Ten. So, quick speculation: who are the two teams you think should add?
Well, I feel like Notre Dame's always going to be
okay. Well, that's not going to happen.
Available, right?
Notre Dame. if we were in school and you sent Notre Dame that paper, do you like me? Check yes or no. They keep checking no. Okay, you can try it tomorrow. No, you can hold up a boom box like they did in the 80s movies and play their favorite song outside their window. The answer is still no. So aside from Notre Dame.
No, I mean, and again, I 100% agree with you. I just think it's one of those. You make the call, make them tell you no again, and most likely they will, and then you move on. I wonder, do you try to go south a little? Like you've covered every part of the country but the Southeast. So I'm wondering, do you try to do that at some point? Does that look like and again, just speculation. You know, for me as a fan, I think if you got a North Carolina or something like that, I think it fits the profile of great academic school. They have history of being good in football, but they're also a basketball power. You get a national market in Charlotte that you haven't had before. And then do you try something like
now, North Carolina joined at the hip with Duke?
So that's the thing that we saw Oregon and Oregon go away from Oregon State and Washington go away from Washington State. So I don't know if you have to take them both or not.
True.
But, you know, as long as they still keep their rivalry with Duke, I think that would be fine. I don't know if you have to take them necessarily. And then do you want to go – and, again, this could still be more of the old thinking where it was all about getting into major markets, but do you try to tap into the SEC backyard and get a Georgia Tech or something like that that fits the academic footprint? You get into Atlanta. Again, it's a team that's won a national title, has had success in multiple sports. Just a couple of teams like that that are the ACC.
The Georgia Tech thing, you're right. I haven't thought about that, because I'm wondering, what if you just poach one of the SEC teams? What if you go after Kentucky?
Certainly, I mean, that would certainly be interesting.
I mean, you're a basketball powerhouse, but you're a fringe football team who right. Every year you get your behind kicked. You're like the homecoming game. You get top talent out of the Big Ten. Why not just go after one of the SEC teams and just see? I would say, like, I would look at Kentucky or Missouri and say, hey, are you really happy in the SEC?
No, I get you there. I know previously it seemed like Missouri wasn't the fit because of St. Louis and Illinois already had St. Louis, and, you know, they were more trying to expand to get to different, you know, bigger cities, bigger markets. So I think that's kind of where my logic was coming in. But Missouri from a geographical fit makes a ton of sense. And, you know, you already have a natural rival with Illinois right there. You're within driving distance of Nebraska and Illinois. It would make a lot of sense. I wanted that to happen before when it was being talked about. So if you had to go pick an SEC school, that's the one I would try to get.
Now, here's another one. Think about what if, and for basketball, it'd be perfect because you get to play at a historical place. What if you just went out and got Kansas?
Oh, for basketball standpoint, that would be perfect.
I mean, they just built a brand new stadium in football. Yep. Mm-hmm. So they're going to need some money to help pay for that thing. And I'm sure the Big Ten is going to, you know, you get a cut of the pie.
Right.
They renegotiate the deal. What about, you know, I mean, at that point, it's almost like cheating, but I think you could probably, if they hadn't won a title in basketball by 2030, you just brought in North Carolina and Kansas. I think you're going to finally end that drought.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's one thing we won't have to hear anymore about, that, you know, Michigan State was the last team to win it in 2000. All of that will be done. I feel like one of those two teams, in addition to the Big Ten teams that have been knocking on the door. Somebody would finally break through at that point.
So I'm just wondering, like, what about – you think any chance they would go after a school like Cal?
See, I feel like they could have to begin with, and they chose not to for whatever reason. So I would be surprised if they went that route again. You know, the fact that, you know, if they could have gone to 20 and brought in like a Cal and Stanford, and, you know, Stanford obviously fits the academic profile and they're probably the best, you know, Olympic sports program in the country, and they decided not to take them. So I'd be surprised if they doubled back, but you never know. You know, as things continue to expand and if teams are trying to get out of contracts and stuff, then, you know, who knows? I mean, we had no idea about the four West Coast schools before it happened. So who knows what's happening behind the scenes?
Okay. All right, Harold, you got anything else for us before we close out this edition?
So I know we talked early on in the episode about the fact that you're getting a matchup like this in week one. And it is rare. And I think the fact that you get a matchup like this and you can lose the game and still make the playoffs should be viewed as a positive. And hopefully you get more of those games going forward. I know there's a home and home, so they'll go to Texas next year. I believe Ohio State's got Alabama coming up on the schedule in 27 and 28 as well. So hopefully this is a sign of things to come. But we should really appreciate what's happening here, because this is only the fifth time that we've had a Big Ten team involved in a top five matchup in a season opener. And Ohio State played Notre Dame 3 years ago, and they won that game, and that kind of, you know, helped them get into the playoff. But before that, you had to go back to 1999. So this is a rare occurrence. We hopefully it won't be as rare moving forward.
I'm hoping so as well. It's okay to lose games, especially with the playoffs. I just want to see some good games. I get nothing from, you know, and I don't even, if I'm a fan, like, why would you want to go to these games and sit out there knowing your team is favored by 50 points? You're going by halftime anyway. So, yeah, it's not really that much fun. I like a little bit of intrigue, so we'll see. All right, Harold. By this time next week, we'll have something. We'll know something about the Big Ten, I think. At least a little bit.
I hope.
Chew on. So, yeah, we'll see. All right. So, we'll get Harold back on next week, guys. Thanks for listening and watching the 5-Star Zone. Keep liking, subscribing, and telling your friends. For Rico Beard, that's Harold Shelton. We'll be back next week to break down week 2. Thanks for watching the 5-Star Zone.